Hello and welcome to the Navy Blue Corner. I'm Ian, joined as always by my good mate Lockie. And the Blues have done the unthinkable. Not only have we beaten the Lions at the Gabba for the first time since I believe it is 2013, feels like forever, but we did it from 46 points down. What are we doing? Our second biggest comeback ever. I mean, we've got a lot to cover in this week's episode. We're going to obviously discuss all the major talking points from our opening round win. Unfortunately, the devastating news regarding Sam Doherty, and we will be building up the round one clash against the Tigers. Super excited to jump in. But firstly, Lockie, you were at the Gabba. I got to ask, what was it like being there in the flesh? And how are you feeling a few days removed?
It is just crazy to think about that arguably the three best games I've ever been to have been the last three games that I've been to, which is just such a blessing. And yeah, halfway through that second term, we were like, why did we do this?
See, we needed you there last year. You should have been there for the prelim. We would have got up.
Yeah, that is on me. That is on me. But no, it still honestly doesn't feel real. The whole opening round doesn't feel quite real. So maybe after we have a big win in the, on Thursday, it'll feel more real.
I agree. It's a weird feeling. Like, probably the circumstances of how it all transpired has made me not truly comprehend what has just happened. I tried to watch the game back a few times, look at the stats, look at what we did, and it just hasn't truly sunken in just yet. But I agree, once we beat the Tigers this Thursday, everything will definitely change. The season will kick in. Now that I'll be there in the flesh, I feel like I'll finally start to feel the season. But let's kick off with our favorite segment that we now kick off every single show. It is, of course, Navy Noise. This is where we talk about the hottest topics going around and dive into all of them. And I think we got to start talking about the comeback. We'll get into the bad part of the game, the start and what went wrong. But I don't want to talk about that, Lockie. I'm excited. I'm pumped up. I want to talk about the good. Did you feel like it was going to turn around? And I guess my follow-up to that was, at what stage did you really start to believe, gee, we're a chance in this game?
Wow, that's such a hard question. I mean, people have commented, I think, on the, you know, pretty broadly on the fact that kind of near the end of that second quarter, it seemed like things were turning around. But when Brisbane were just piling on the goals, it felt helpless to me being up there, you know, just being surrounded by Brisbane fans and just the way that they were scoring. It just didn't feel like it could happen. And then that's the part that doesn't feel real. Like, just how it seems like you snap your fingers and the comeback was complete and we're ahead in a flash.
So, yeah, did you have a moment where finally the margin went to something? Maybe it was the point we finally hit the front. But after all of that that had preceded it, was there a moment for you where you started to truly believe, okay, it's now game on. We're officially in this. This isn't just a flash in the pan. We're not a Brisbane goal away from being shut out of the game. Did you have any of those moments, or was it a lot more at the ground just kind of feeling what was happening?
I think it truly was, because it happened in such a flash. It was the Cottrell goal, the one that put us in front. It was just like, it all felt unbelievable until that point. And yeah, I don't know. So every goal is so memorable. Like when Carroll put his one through, that felt like a big defining moment with his kind of coming of age quarter. What about you?
Well, I think firstly, like, did I think we were going to turn it around? Absolutely not. It was that start. Like, I was really trying to, I guess, rationalize what was happening. I think that was kind of it. The longer it was going on, like, near the end of the first quarter, feels like we wrestled back a little bit of the control, but we were still down by so much, not playing good footy at all.
No.
It was then, well, okay, did I expect us to beat Brisbane in Brisbane? No. So I guess maybe I can deal with losing. It isn't a good performance. Okay, maybe second half, just give me something to be excited about. Let's forget about opening round. Chalk this off as a loss we knew was going to happen. And then, you know, round one, let's go. Right. So my belief had definitely disappeared, and it was insane. Like that third quarter, I agree with you. It was, as soon as the goals kept going in, it was like, 2 minutes ago, we were down by 40, and now we're within a sniff. It felt crazy. I think Kennedy's goal that decreased the margin, I think it was to 13 points. That's when I started to go, okay, this isn't just we've come back and all of a sudden then Brisbane kicked four in a row and the game's, you know, back blown out and there's our comeback while Brisbane weren't trying. That was like a, hang on a minute, could we? Is this about to happen? But I agree with you. I think Carroll's goal was the real, put us 2 points down, we're a kick in it. It almost felt too perfect. This guy's come on as sub, he's playing the best he's ever played. And it was so like, good. We've got the clear momentum. That was the real turning point where I was 100%. I've just understood that this many goals have gone through. We can genuinely win this game. It was, it was a blast. And I guess, you know, it was the second biggest comeback victory in Carlton's history. What for you, if you're trying to look at it a few days removed, what changed from that, I guess, dismal first quarter that really allowed us to turn the game around? Do you have anything that you can really put the spotlight on as to what was the catalyst, whether it was a player, a game plan shift? What was it for you that sort of turned that game around for us?
I think there's an interesting conversation to be had around like the momentum of side of footy, which we often talk about, you know, in back in the days where it seemed like we had five goals in a row kicked on us every week. And a lot of our games seem to follow this template where a team jumps out and there's just all this momentum and then the other team comes back and then it's kind of close in the end. So that kind of momentum narrative versus the pressure. And we've spoken about this before. The pressure element is just something that I don't understand. I don't understand how we can look that way in a quarter and a half of footy, seemingly unable to lay a tackle, and then seemingly flip a switch, and then the other team does the opposite. I just don't know what there is in that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people mention that it felt like that game against Brisbane was almost the whole of last season put into one game of footy because it was like the slow start, turn it around, have that blistering quarter, and then another close win. It was kind of everything. And it's such a strange thing that we seem to have in us where even if I guess we don't come away with the win and it just is that shootout at the end, you can still start to feel, okay, well, there's something still here. Whereas that was obviously the disappointing part halfway through the game where start of the season, we're now being talked about as a contender, as we should be off last year's form, out of our expectations for the season. But it felt like it was a continuation of that preseason form. And you start to really worry about, oh no, what is going wrong? But it really is that pressure. That was the pressure and contest were the few things that I had really written down. And seven tackles in the first quarter, we were down, losing the count by 10. And then you look in that third quarter, we won that quarter by 10 tackles. So it completely shifted. And then it was those other little things. I think the uncontested possessions was another big gauge that kind of showed the difference in probably that control of the game. If you look at the first quarter, we lost it by 13. Third quarter, we were winning it by 29 uncontested possessions. And that, it wasn't like last season early on where we were winning that stat, but there were nothing kicks in the back line. These were genuine transitions. We're chipping the ball around. We're moving better. And are you able to try and figure out what it is that allows us to, I guess, bring that out? And how can we attempt to do that for longer or change the game plan around where we're not having to rely on as much pressure? Because I had this as one of my later questions, but I feel like this is very prevalent now where it feels like we've built this game plan on the contest, on the heavy pressure. Do you think that that is the best thing to do, I guess, considering how bad it can happen when we're not on and when we're not winning the contest, when the pressure's not there, the result is almost so severe in the opposite direction. Do you think that that's something that we can sustain or where do we have to evolve in that space?
Yeah, I think the jury's still out on that aspect. Like, I think that's going to be part of the coaching team's kind of evolution across over the year, because it kind of felt like to me like we would, I don't know, I hate using, it feels like a cliche thing to say, but we weren't like playing our way at the start. So it was just so completely on Brisbane's terms. And so I don't want to subscribe to the narrative anymore. And I feel like sometimes I'm susceptible to this, that it's like a mindset thing around the pressure and the players didn't rock up or those kind of things. Because there's just no way that these boys that we love rocked up thinking it was going to be easy or something. And that's why they weren't tackling. Cross that out. So I think it has to be related to that, you know, to the game plan and to the point of whether it's a problem. Like I said, the jury's still out, but we won. And I know we could have lost. I know we could have lost. But all that matters at the end of the day is the 4 points. We always come back to that. But it can't happen like this every single week. But
yes,
you know.
Yeah. And I don't want this to be like a cop out, but I wonder how much plays into it that we do obviously have a few players out, I guess, in that midfield, and the makeup of it was a little bit different. Maybe we tried a few different things that hasn't had that cohesion. And I'm looking quite a lot in that forward half in particular. No Martin, no Motlop. You're having Fantasia in there. Even if we had every player fully fit, I've only really played like one maybe season together in cohesion, one half of it kind of finally gelling with the actual game plan that we're trying to play out there. So I do wonder if there's an element of just that connectivity and whether things just weren't amazing. It looked like the communication of just where players were meant to be and who was going into the contest, who was staying out. Felt like that changed quite a lot when we started to play better football. We didn't seem to be getting hurt as much on the turnover. Brisbane still obviously had their chances. They missed a lot in front of goal. They kicked those. They did. Who knows what happens? Does that shift things back in their direction? But yeah, I think if I'm going to talk about what changed, one of the big things, and I don't know if you can necessarily, I don't know how you change this every single week, but we're so fumbly in that first quarter. The conditions are tough, but Brisbane were clean with it. Were we trying to play too perfect? Because it looked a little like that in preseason. We're trying to be perfect with the hands, perfect with the kicks, moving it a little fast. But like as soon as we slowed the game down, looked for the chips, moved the ball laterally to change the direction, we actually went the first option quite a lot. Whereas in the first quarter, it was, I've got the ball. And maybe you can attest to it because you're at the ground. You could see the play. The camera's obviously zoomed in a lot on the TV. A lot of the time in that first half, we'd win the football, be under a lot of pressure. And Brisbane were playing amazing. I don't want to take away
from
that. They were electric. I don't think many teams are stopping what they're doing. But even when we had the ball, we were second-guessing quite a lot. Was it when you were there, was it a lack of options? Did you notice what was maybe causing our poor turnovers at times?
Yeah, lack of option definitely always feels like a prevalent thing in those scenarios. But I think you're right. It was like it did feel like when we slowed it down and became more systematic, that was when it was working. But that's still a high skill in my eye. Like that's not necessarily a safe approach because some of those kicks and stuff that we were biting off still felt high risk. Where they were on the ground and the like. But yeah, that's just the way to do it. Coming out of the back line in that way or dominating from the stoppage. It's just our recipe.
Well, I'm glad you pointed out the still going with the risky kicks and trying to still take the game on, attacking the corridor when things still weren't going well. That, and I guess that we had the comeback, we had the win, we were able to hold on as well. Do you think that I guess, in a sense, is just a sign of the maturity of the group in what we've been able to do? And then talking to us being able to hold on with some of these close games, we did it a lot at the end of last year. Are you a bit more confident when games become tight that you think that we can finally hold on?
It's so crazy. It's so crazy just thinking about the evolution of things as we've had this podcast. It can't be anything else but the maturity of it to me because the sample size is too big now.
Yeah.
I just don't, it just doesn't, it's not, it can't be a fluke anymore. We're getting there and we're going to lose some of these close ones, but I don't believe that like, there's just no way 12 months ago this team would have done this.
Yeah. And it's great to know that we have this belief now, and this is such a tangible thing. Doesn't matter what team we play in this game, to come back from such a deficit and to win the game, what that does for your confidence. To it's been spoken about so much, I guess, for Collingwood and what they did with their close wins. They were always down, trailing at three-quarter time. For us to be able to have these things in the bank that we can draw upon when times are tough, we've been through so much adversity, to seemingly come out the other side of that. There's still obviously a lot to work on. We don't want to be down by that big a margin. But these are some amazing things that we can now look back and know that we've done it. Whereas in previous seasons, it was this, well, let's hope we can do it. But there's so much more that is tangible now. And my faith and stress seems so much less than it was. I don't know how you felt in those last few minutes. You know, Harry kicks the goal. There's a minute 10 still on the clock. I was obviously nervous, as anyone would be. But I would say compared to any game last year that would have been in the same scenario, I was so much more calm about it all. Were you the same, or were you still absolutely shitting yourself?
I was arguably more stressed than the finals somehow.
Well,
I don't know. Footy does crazy things to you.
I love it. Well, I guess, like, kind of off that, was there a stress around if we did lose? And I kind of want to ask the question. It's maybe a dumb hypothetical to throw out there, but if we hadn't got that win, the comeback still was there, but we don't ultimately go on and win. What does that kind of mean? Mm. What would have that have meant for you if you were to try and read from that? Because it's such a fine margin. So would you have read a lot into the fact that we would have lost the close one?
I think that's actually a really good question. And this is why my stress doesn't make sense. Because I think Dad and I were saying it to each other when we hit the lead in the third quarter, that was, hit the lead again in the fourth quarter, and during that last minute, it's like we're proud of where we've come in this game.
Yeah.
And I was saying to myself, it's okay if we lose this one, because to everything that you said at the start of the show, all the circumstances around this game, then to be down by 46, I was just like, you know what?
Yeah.
If they get a lucky kick here, they were centimeters away from kicking a goal at the end. If that happened, I'm not sure I'd feel extremely different.
Yeah. I think you can live with it because of circumstances, but I don't know. This could be a game that we look back on. Obviously, you're going to look back at it fondly because of how it happened, but being able to steal a win in tough conditions at a ground that no one seems to be able to win at except for the Brisbane Lions, just what that does, not only to bank those points, but to get that win that you know, we do our predictions at the start of the year, and both of us will go through every single game and try to see where our winnable games are, to see roughly where that would put us on the ladder. To get one that both of us probably would have sensibly said, okay, that's a loss, that's fine, we can't win every single game. To tick that off early, that just puts us one step ahead. And I think now it's on to that Richmond game to make sure that that wasn't just a waste, and hopefully we can definitely learn from what went wrong to ensure it doesn't happen again. But I want to talk positively still on that comeback. What was, I guess, the most impressive thing for you? What did you love the most about that comeback win at the Gabba?
Yeah, wow. I mean, you touched on it, but it's just the fact that this was truly the biggest kind of home and away monkey on the back that I can think of. Like you just said, in terms of the belief, like, just being able to come back and get this win up there, like, that's almost the best single game scenario that could happen, I think, in this whole home and away season. It is the basis of so much belief this year. It's just such a perfect way to start things.
It's a massive, I guess, like, challenge to the players when they were down by so much. Is this how you want to start your season? This is the team that kicked you out of finals. You could have been playing off in a grand final. They stopped you and you had the big lead. There's so much motivation to do it. But then being able to think you can do it and wanting to do it, and then actually committing to it and making it happen. It's such a big shift. And yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. I think if I'm going to say that what impressed me the most was that I loved that it was, again, it was probably what drove the end of last season, but every single person contributed to that.
Totally
game.
Standouts.
There was definitely standout individual players. You're always going to need that, but it was, you know, your Fogarty's, your Carroll's, your Cottrell's. I could throw so many different names out there that all stood up when you needed them to, playing their role, that we're not having to just rely on Charlie, even though, you know, he kicks a couple of goals in a minute to turn things around. Every other person allowed that to happen. And that's such a big step up for us.
Yeah.
And it just shows what happens when we buy in. Every single person is playing at their best. Just what can happen? You can beat Brisbane at the Gabba being 46 points down. It's just insane. It's insane.
Totally. It's funny. That was a reflection I had when I watched back the third quarter, was how even I felt like the spread was across everyone, and everyone kind of had their part in it. You're so right. Far out.
No, it's amazing. So yeah, if you're watching this on Blue Abroad right now, chuck it in the comments. Let us know what impressed you the most about that win. If you have any favorite moments, feel free to chuck them in there. And then what for you was that big catalyst? What were the reasons we were able to turn it around? And if you're listening in podcast form, head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner. All the links will be in the description and show notes, so you can just click there rather than even having to search. But if you want to, it's at Navy Blue Corner. And let us know wherever you interact with us, because I'm very keen to still talk about the game, because it's just such a fun one to chat about. So but good. We have to talk. We've talked about the positive. We've got to talk about the negative. And that was around that poor start. It was horrific, trailing by 32 points at quarter time, going down to the further 46-point margin in the second term. I just kind of want to ask you, how are you feeling at the time? We've touched on it slightly, but what thoughts were running through your mind when things were going so poorly?
Dark thoughts. Dark thoughts, indeed. Like I said before, it's so funny, just the brain of a footy fan. Because I was having thoughts like, kind of what you said, that how this is like an extension of the preseason that we were already underwhelmed with.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this what this season's going to be? Mm-hmm. Is the narrative that this season, like, are we going to be that team that made a prelim?
Yeah.
And then it went down the gutter. Like that thought popped into my head. That's how easy it just seemed for Brisbane. It just did not even seem like they were trying when they were just piling on goal after goal.
I think that was the disappointing aspect of it, was just the ease of Brisbane were moving the football through us. It was, you know, I'm getting flashbacks to the game against Port Adelaide where they kicked 19 in a row. It just didn't feel like we had an answer. We couldn't get our hands on the ball. When we did, we'd turn it over. And Brisbane were exceptional. Every single one of their kicks were hitting, and it's weird because at the start I felt like we did defend well. A lot of their looks that they were getting, even though their pressure was high, we were turning over the ball. When they would kick it back, we were making them have to kick from the boundary, they'd have to kick from wide. The issue early was they were nailing them. Like, I think it was McCluggage kicks one.
Oh my God.
Ridiculous. Couldn't and then miss. McCarthy kicks another tough one, and they were kicking everything. And, you know, they kicked about five goals. I don't even think they kicked an actual point. Everything was just straight through. And it's the pressure that that puts on an opposition. You saw it when we were doing the opposite, when we seemingly couldn't miss from every shot in front of goal. It's so tough. Yes. And then it really was, for me, the turnovers that was going so bad for us. Is there a reason why you think we were hurt so much by turnover? Is it simply that lack of pressure, defensive setup? You could obviously see the ground a little bit better being there. Was it a case, because I've seen a couple of people mention that, were we just too aggressive in our movements and then we were caught out the back? Where did you see the issue with losing it on transition? Because it felt like it was two kicks and Brisbane will kick a goal every single time.
My reaction here is to give a bit of a cop-out answer, which is what I'm going to do. I'm going to use my one cop-out of the episode. But I just want to kind of reiterate it, because we mentioned a similar thing earlier. I think they were my premiership favorite.
Yeah.
Not only my premiership favorite, but this was at their home ground. And they just have some unbelievable players with an unbelievable game plan. And I think it would be, it wouldn't be right of us to assume that Brisbane aren't going to have a stretch of really quality footy in a game like this. So that's to not answer your question. So, because I'm interested to hear your
Thank
take.
Thank you. Appreciate
but
it.
But I guess like reflecting on, just on the whole thing is seeing that Collingwood beat them in the grand final last year by under a goal. And we've just beaten them by under a goal on their turf. It's not going to get harder than this to me. Like, this was the, this was it. This was the peak of the home and away season for me in terms of what we're going to be coming up against. And we got through it. It wasn't pretty at the start, but we did get there.
It's hard. It is hard to answer. I'm not sure I have a straight answer to it either. I do wonder if we were like in preseason. I'm just trying to, again, think about what it could possibly be. It seemed like in preseason, we were really trying to just take the game on a little bit too much. And when the skills weren't there, when things were poor, we're just getting hurt a lot on the transition, getting hurt the other way. My frustration probably was around us not being able to wrestle the momentum back quick enough. But we finally did late in that first quarter. And maybe that is just simply Brisbane were unstoppable. And any team you put up against them in that scenario wasn't going to be able to do the same thing. I know at some stage we threw Charlie Curnow back down into the defense just to try and get his hands on the football, shore things up a little bit. Maybe learning on that, should we pull that lever a little bit quicker to wrestle things back? But yeah, I think I'm trying to look at it probably from your perspective, which is it was bad. Those who will be able to analyze it better than me at the football club will know what to look at. I'm focusing on how we did the same thing to them a few quarters later. And that second quarter was that break even. Third quarter, we turned it on. Last quarter was the grind. And for us to be able to do that, we haven't been able to do that against many opposition, let alone one of the best teams in the comp at their stomping ground. That is really exciting. Yeah. It might have taken way too long, but it was able to happen. But on that, we've spoken about how good our good is, how bad we are at our worst. I guess, what do you see as the real Carlton? It's one game. It's hard to talk about it, but we can't be doing that every single week. We can't allow our worst to be on show.
Yeah.
Is our worst really that bad? And what is more the Carlton mean, I guess you could say?
Definitely. Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like I semi-answered this in my last point. I think it's possible that, wow, this is going to be a really optimistic statement. Like, I see a world where that is the worst passage that we see from us this season. Truly. Because I'd feel so much differently about this if this exact scenario happens on Thursday night. And we're sitting here and we're going, how did we let that Richmond team do that to us? I feel so much better about it that it was just the pinnacle of them, the pinnacle of the league in Brisbane. So for me, I haven't changed anything. I still think we are a contender, and I think we're a top four team.
Yeah, I'd almost go further and say if this happened in round, let's say 9 or 10, I'd probably be more concerned. But because this was the first quarter of the first game of football of the year, you're still a bit rusty. You're still finding your way. You're updating your system a little bit, some new personnel. Yep. We're not going to be perfect all year. We're going to have a slump. Maybe that's at the start of the year. Even if we are winning games, who knows? It is a concern for me that we are still capable of that. But it's kind of what we're talking about with the Sam Walsh injury. It's like, I'm not going to get too worried until something does happen. If this continues to be a trend, then I'm going to worry. If this was a one-off, I don't know. I guess you just live with it, move on, and be happy that you got the win in the end. It's an interesting dilemma.
No, it is. It is. And it's another one of those things where we just need that sample size before we can truly know. But it's a good start.
Yeah. Let's go to another big talking point. This was, can't believe we've gone this long without really mentioning it and talking about it at length. Harry Mackay. I mean, we've been talking about how this whole game didn't necessarily feel like it happened, didn't feel real, probably because this is the most Hollywood fairy tale scripting event possible. Minute to go, ball goes down, Harry Mackay takes an amazing grab, goes back, all the pressure on him, slots what was the match-winning goal. I mean, he was phenomenal again. Not only obviously kicked three goals, one, but the most important one of the game. I guess how big will that game and that moment be for his confidence? And then I guess taking that pressure off, or are we going a little too early? Because this is maybe, we're not going to do the media meltdown this week, but that would have been the media meltdown, which is Kane Corns, who we love. What's his name? Barrett as well. All talking about, oh, it's only one game, he needs to do it more, all this nonsense. Where are you sitting in the middle of that? Is this the breakthrough that he needed to get out of that slump, or are we judging it a little too soon?
I'm kind of in the middle of it all. I'd say, like, in terms of for his confidence, this moment, that moment in this game, I think is massive. And I think it's going to be a huge step forward in it. And then I'm also in the camp that there's still going to be those moments throughout this year, as there is with every player.
Mm.
My God, did you see Charlie Cameron's miss? Like, what was
Kipwood,
that?
Kipwood, McCarthy couldn't hit him, like Danaher again.
Quite hear anything about those. So, yeah, I think he's still, it's not going to be. Oh yeah, I think it's a bit, you know, people going above and beyond saying it's fixed. Like, I think that's a little much, but I think it's a massive step in the right direction.
I've liked what the "he's fixed it" camp are alluding to, which is every time he seems to kick for goal, it looks like it's the same routine. Right. Everything looks similar. But I do agree with you. Obviously, he's going to have games where he misses. The frustrating and annoying part of this whole scenario is the media's built up this headline. They continue to go at it every second. He has one amazing game, amazing moment, of which he should be finally, you know, applauded for it and saying, well done. Yeah. He's, after everything he's copped, it's great to see that he's still capable of this. Instead, they're still using it as a, like, well, needs to do it more. And it's like, come on. Like, you're just, at this stage, you're clearly not in reality. It's you're ridiculous. Just trying to get your clickbait, which is why no one likes likes those shows anymore. Like, I saw it on Twitter. I'm not watching it. Did anyone actually see it happen?
No.
Live?
Oh, my God, no.
No, because no one's watching it. No one's watching that absolute garbage.
And that's the thing, though, isn't it? Like, they do it because they know the reaction that comes.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a vicious cycle of crap.
Yeah. But I just,
and I think it is. I'll just say on the like, the part that got me the most was people being like, "Come on, Charlie!" Like for his comment, like in the, you know, saying that hopefully they'll get off, you know, give him a break. Mm. Like, come on, Charlie, this is what he gets paid for. It's like, it's just the perfect thing for teammates to be doing. What do you like? How can you genuinely be opposed to that? Come
him and Nick Newman, it's why they're held in such high regard around this place, where any chance that they've gotten in the media to talk about it, it's backing their brother up and having little you know, drive-bys towards the media, which we absolutely love to see. It gets the fans up and about, and it's, you know, it's a bit of fun. If they're going to hang it on him, why not give it back when he finally goes against them? But, you know, what were you feeling in that moment? He takes that mark, he's gone back. I guess run me through your thoughts and then your reaction. That's what I want to know. You were there, you were able to feel it with the Blues Brothers that were around. I'm keen to know about it.
Yes, I do have Blues Brothers FOMO. I did miss that memo, unfortunately.
Mm.
I'm trying to take myself back to the moment. I don't know. Numbness. I don't think I was confident, nor did I think he was going to miss somehow. Just, it's present.
It was a strange one. I was, and this is maybe shows, this. It's going to sound so wankerish. It's not meant to be, but it's like the maturity in me growing up and being a little bit older than I obviously was a few years ago and thinking about the football, because a few years ago, I would have been wanting the win, wanting to kick it for selfish football fandom reasons. Whereas when he was lining up, all I was thinking was, just please don't miss, because I can't have what the media are going to say, even though it's so ridiculous. And it was just like, I want more than anything for him to kick this for him.
I know, right?
Like, I just want it for him. Yes. And that's
good call.
That's what I love, that that's my perspective has altered in that way, where I almost care more about these guys at stages than I do the results. And that's what it meant. And that's what it's meant this whole journey. It's only one game. We know that. It's a long season. But the biggest pressure mounting moment for him to slot that, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. And the other thing from Harry, we didn't go with the dual rucks in Pitto and TDK. We saw Harry in there. What did you make of him in the ruck? What did you make of the new setup? We had Cripper going in there for a little bit. Matty Kennedy, did you like it? I'm keen to know your perspective on the ruck setup without the with Pitternet out there. Big Brad.
You stole my bloody under the radar point. I should have put it in the run sheet.
We can talk about it now.
Damn it, Ian.
Pivot.
Yeah, we can skip ahead. Yeah, because that was my thing. Like that was such a big part last week of thinking how this game was gonna go. Was what did we see in this preseason game where we just got absolutely smoked in the ruck? What are we going to see? Is Pitt going to play? Is this Harry just a one game experiment? Da, da, da. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think we will be seeing Pitt for a bit, would be my guess. But what would I know? I thought they were going to name him last week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I did really like it. And it is a conversation that's definitely gone under the radar, which is why we've introduced this new topic. I'll maybe save mine for a little bit later. Rather than going right now, keep things going. Give them a bit of a taste. It's basically going to be a topic of discussion that we just don't think is being spoken about enough in this community, in this content space. And the ruck is such a interesting thing. It looked good. Mm-hmm. And McInerney and Danaher, probably not the matchup I would have expected us to go with the Deconing solo ruck with help.
Right?
But God, Harry looked really, really good in there. And I like that he can add to it a bit more when the ball hits the ground. I don't know. I'm 50-50 on Paddy Cripps in the ruck.
I was going to ask you about this. Yeah.
When he's in there, he looks okay. And I like him being around the ball when it hits the ground, that extra midfielder. It is just that worry of, is it too much of a risk? I know he's only doing the around the ground stuff, which is less
than
the center bounce. But is that going to damage him at all if he is getting thrown around in the ruck contests? Right. I probably prefer the more Matty Kennedy shout of just get a body in Sean Grigg style and see what happens if we do need a rotation that isn't a Harry Mackay.
Very interesting. Yeah, I hadn't really considered the injury risk, actually. I more looked at that as a, are we actually, like, how are we doing in the minutes where one of those guys is the ruckman? And I haven't had time to, you know, actually look at it, but I'd be interested to know, like, are we actually a net positive without either Harry or TDK in the ruck? Because part of me just feels like maybe it's not that important. Like, it's not crushing us those times where those guys are in there for a few minutes here and there.
Because it's not like we're throwing Matty Owies in the ruck, who's just clearly going to be completely dominated. There's a bit of a contest going on. So it's an exciting thing, because I think this week it looks like it'll be Nan Curvis and Naismith probably as the tandem rucks. Could be interesting to see whether we bring Pitt in to deal with that or whether we go with what worked. And right now, to go a little bit ahead as the preview, I'm going with the rucks that we had this week.
Same.
Try it again, see what happens. Give me more evidence. We want the sample size to increase. Why not find out about it? Worst case, it doesn't work and we can deal with it later. But that was a lot of fun to talk about, Harry. We've basically got one other Navy noise thing before we go into my under the radar. And it's the unfortunate reel, the one big blemish of such an incredible night. Sam Doherty rupturing his ACL, tearing his meniscus, gone for the year. Third ACL, it is grim. Like, he's just been through so much. I've been struggling to find the right words to say what I can add to the conversation on this other than just, I love Sam Doherty and I wish this didn't happen to him. Like, I didn't make a post about it on socials because I was just so rattled by the news. When I first saw it, I thought it was a meme page that was pretending to be Carlton posting it, that it wasn't real. There was no part of me that thought that that was actually something that did occur, particularly because he was came back on and still played a bit of footy. Ridiculous. So I guess it's obviously devastating, but how did you react to the news? And I guess, what are your kind of thoughts on such a big injury?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll echo all of your thoughts on it. It is just, it's just unbelievable that it has to be him after everything that he's been through. And I know we would have plugged it at the time, but definitely recommend listening to his episode on Dan Does Footy. Like, talking through his story in detail is just a very inspiring listen. And there's parts of his journey that I didn't realize. And just such a weird way that it happened too. There was no bloody internet in the Gabba. And so at the start of the third quarter, we see Carroll come on and we're like, wait, so that means someone's been subbed off. And I think we ran through about 18 guys who, or maybe it was them that was subbed off before we got to Doc. And then it was like, oh, it did look like he was a bit proppy out there, but it was just such an under the radar, just strange way for it to happen. So weird.
I don't know if I've ever seen someone do an ACL and come back on and play a quarter of football.
He just gave it a little miraculous. Bit of a clip, and that's
probably him as well. I wonder how much of it was he can clearly just get through so much and get through so much pain that this to me, I'd be on the buddy bed for the next 12 months. I'm never standing up again. But Doherty, he's like, nah, strap it up. Let's go. I'll just move forward. And I don't know. I heard someone mention that, is there an element that he knew he was done, so he just wanted to try and play for as much as he could? I don't know. God, who don't knows if that was even something. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. It's worrying, but it's kind of disrespectful, but you've got to kind of move on and move forward. It's obviously a big blow for us. So what does it mean to lose him for the year from a team perspective? You know, what is it that he brings that we're kind of now looking to replace?
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting part, isn't it? Because we were kind of, I don't know if you were, but I felt a bit unclear of what his role was going to be in the team this year. Because he is so versatile, and if we could have him on one of him on every line, we would. So it's definitely particularly bad with Walsh still out. You know, it's gonna be testing our depth in the midfield where he was looking at playing. But I think, like we were kind of saying last week, I do still feel confident in our depth, and I don't think this is something that will derail us.
It's not ideal. I agree with you, and it does feel disrespectful, but it's like, if there's a positive to a player getting injured that is a key player to us, is the fact that I'm not sure how vital he was to our structures. There's obviously so many other things. You want him out there because he's one of your top half players. He brings the leadership, and that's probably the biggest thing I think we'll lose, that on-field leadership, his hard running, toughness, everything that's there stands up in the big moments. Do we that semi-final game if someone else is in Sam Doherty's place, particularly with his injury through that game? I'm not sure they do, but as far as just a magnet on a board in their position, I don't know if he had a main role or position heading into the year. He was kind of not halfback anymore, kind of mid-wing, half forward. It feels like we can kind of replace it positional-wise. It's obviously just all those other qualities that you can't replace. There's no one that we can bring in that's going to sort that out. So I guess, how do we replace that? Who is on your radar in the coming months that you can kind of see maybe we're going the, and I'll actually use this the correct way that no one seems to do, almost the Moneyball style, where it's not one player replacing Doherty, but you're trying to use six players to deal with these traits.
Wow, bang. I don't know who just copped a drive-by just then, but somebody did.
Someone did, and they're feeling it. They don't know where it came from. They've been hit.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, there's some interesting names, isn't there? Like, I kind of forgot about Elijah Hollands that, you know, we're only a couple weeks before he can come back. Ollie spending more time in the midfield. Walsh, obviously, to return at some stage. Man, could you tell me, like, what is bot season going to look like?
Oh.
Is he like he could genuinely be anywhere from our biggest breakout to that was his highlight, right? Like that's possible.
Yeah. I mean, he was incredible. I want to touch on him a little bit later, but
yeah.
I've said my big criticism of him in the off season was I haven't seen that game even at VFL level where oh my God, here's the player. He's not ready yet, but here's all the lovely things that Jack Carroll has that I'm excited to see in a few years once he's developed and we see him at the AFL level. I hadn't seen the glimpses. And so that was my critique of him. I want to see the glimpses. Now, to his credit, I was saying I want to see the glimpses in the twos. He's come out and almost been best on in that second half. I mean, I think it was Gary Lyon or Jonathan Brown, one of the guys on the couch was like, he was almost the reason they turned it around. He was that good. And he'd be thrust into the coalface at one of the toughest parts of that game, step up the way he did. He's not going to play like that every single week. He doesn't have to. Keep showing me glimpses, but that's going to do a wonder for his confidence. And yeah, I think it's him, Elijah Hollands on that half forward mid rotation, Jack Martin back into that forward line can take some ease off. I feel like there are almost a whole role of players that can slot into those roles. But yeah, it's just going to be that leadership, that person you turn to when everything's not going your way that you can trust. We don't have that. And you even saw a few of those collisions, I think, late in that second quarter. He's still putting his body on the line, tearing an ACL and a meniscus. He's superhuman. And if anyone can come back from it and be better again, it's Sam Doherty. And yeah, just sending all our love to him. It's brutal. You just don't want it to happen. If you could pick someone in the team that it never happens to, it would have been him. So it's brutal. But I'll go for my under the radar. And
give it to me.
My discussion point was the key defenders. Well, you've brought the tall men, the big boys to the discussion. I'm bringing
the big
just in a different slot around the ground. Because a big talking point from preseason wasn't just what's the ruck set up. It's we've got no Jacob Wiedering. Lewis Young and Kempe look like garbage down back. We're in trouble. We're coming up against Brisbane. Their forward line is looking pretty good. We're in danger. Even when things were bad and the ball was coming in hot, I don't know how much I'm blaming the key defenders on that one. There's obviously some part to play structurally, but I reckon it's all the mid pressure and how easy it is moving throughout the other parts of the ground.
That was my feeling too, yeah.
I thought Lewis Young played really, really well. I don't know how you thought about him, which is, I didn't see that coming. What were your kind of thoughts on the defensive stocks after seeing that game? Yeah. And are you a bit more confident now about how the key tolls can fare before Wiedering does return?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you have to. There's no way that could have damaged your confidence about them. And I'm agreeing with you. I definitely felt like, midfielders, that was that's the reason why the ball was coming in, how it was. Like, it's similar to the Melbourne Pracky, where it was like, how are you going to defend these with the space that you're giving their ball users? I mean, one of the things, do you want under the radar?
Here we go.
I thought Lewis with ball in hand looked a bit different.
He was hitting targets, mate. He looked, sorry to steal your thunder. No, but
this is your point, so go ahead.
The big thing about Lewis Young that I've said quite a lot is when he does just simple things and plays a role, goes lockdown, goes the first option, he's good. It's when he almost tries too much, takes on far too much, that's when it's bad. And my big critique has simply been when he gets the ball, he looks so unsure of what to do.
Yeah.
He's so looking true. Around. Even if other players do the exact same thing mentally, they don't seem to show it physically. And I know that's such a stupid thing to bring so up, but true. Like if Saad gets the ball, he in his head is probably like, him, no, I don't know what to pass it to. Him, no, he's looking.
Yeah.
But Saad is just looks composed. Lewis Young looks like deer in the headlights, like he's about to just handball the ball because he's shitting himself.
Yeah.
This week, all of a sudden, he's immediately, he knows exactly where he wants to go. There's a player there, hit the target. That's what I want. Keep it simple. Don't try to be Jacob Wiedering. You don't have to be. Just work and be that lockdown defender. Keep things simple. More of that. And I know it's one game, small sample size. Who knows what could happen for the next few weeks coming, but I just thought it needed a shout out because there was so much trash talking from a lot of people. We were very quick to, after a game that doesn't count preseason, to say he should never bloody
speak
put on
yourself,
a jumper.
Mate.
I'm not saying us.
You want to say Burton out there, mate.
I can say whoever, but there was so much ridicule coming for Lewis Young. I thought he absolutely deserved a shout out, and same to Brody Kemp, thought they held up extremely, extremely well. But we've thrown in a few new segments, Lockie. But I think we need to go back to one that we finally last year threw out there as our first real segment, first sting, first ever sting. And we're bringing it back this year. It is, of course, the Hall of Fame. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the ceremony of ceremonies. Straighten your tie, adjust your monocle, and raise a pinky for the navy blue corner Hall of Fame.
Gets me every time.
Look, mate, this is almost a hats off ceremony, I believe. This is how respectful I am to the the hair is looking horrific, but that's what it means. The Hall of Fame, prestigious event, is back for another season. Those who are new listeners, new viewers, may not know what this is, so I'll give it a quick rundown. Basically, each week, Lockie and myself are able to induct someone, something into the Navy Blue Corner Hall of Fame. Whatever we saw this week, whether it was something funny, something stupid, it's a bit of a lighthearted segment where we get to, maybe it's a rant, maybe you absolutely hated something and you're about to rip someone to shreds. Whatever it is, you get to induct it into the Hall of Fame. And we maybe didn't get a lot from the listeners last year. Lockie and I, we're studying, we're trying to find something to bring to the table. My call out this year and this week is I want more from you guys, because I want to be able to get enough that we can vote on. And each week, you, the listeners, the viewers, get to induct something into the Hall of Fame. It's a bit of fun. I'm very excited to hear what you've brought to the table to kick things off this year.
Well, let's just remember, first one of the season. Yeah. It's all uphill from here.
We'll get there.
I wasn't sure exactly how to frame this one, but I'm going to be inducting a person into the Hall of Fame this week.
Ooh.
And it was the lovely attendant at
Do
the
Do we know a name?
Didn't get a name, unfortunately. My interaction with them was brief, but it lived on throughout the game because we got there quite early on Friday. You know, wanted to check out the Gabba. Haven't been there since I was a kid. Grab a drink before. Let's go and suss where the seats are. Not a whole lot of people sitting in our area, but, you know, she checks our tickets and makes a comment with a bit of a smirk on her face. Like, you're going to be pretty outnumbered at this end of the ground, don't you? And we're like, And she's like, this is the Brisbane area. And we're like, all right, sure, play on. First quarter, absolutely felt like the Brisbane area. Felt like we were getting absolutely drowned out. And this lovely attendant was there entire game at the end of the, you know, where the staircase comes up. So every time something would, like, she was kind of in my vision. So I could see as Brisbane were on this roll, she's like, you know, look, smiling, like getting in on the chants as everyone's
eyeballing you. She's pointing you out, mate.
Literally.
You do it.
Literally.
Oh, no.
And then once the comeback started and the Blues fans around the ground are starting to get up and about, and there's Brisbane chants and Carlton are coming over with their chants. And then as the game went on, I could just see her face. It wasn't as, you know, clearly a Brisbane fan. Very cheerful.
Her tears brought tears of joy to your eyes. Is that what I'm hearing?
I hate to say it, but it just felt like the perfect redemption of where she's like, who do these guys think they are? Carlton fans sitting in the Brisbane area, you're going to get absolutely pumped. It was going to happen. Yeah. And then by the end. So she's
beautiful, mate. Nameless Brisbane Lions attendee is going into the
Probably should have got the name.
We'll find a name. I'm sure she'll listen. Big fan.
Reach out.
Obviously. But no, I like that. There's nothing better than a bit of karma. And I was very close to inducting the Brisbane cheer squad for their banner this week.
Yeah. I was close to posting that on my story.
I do love a bit of banter between teams. And I do like that on the banner. Like you poke fun of it. But like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If we were to make a banner next time we play them about something, it's like, who gives a shit? Like, let's move on. But this, I had two options. And I didn't love either one enough, but I've found a reason to induct one. So maybe this isn't the greatest launch of this segment ever. I was so I was so close to inducting Gary Lyon because I'm not sure if you I'll say both of them, but I'm not inducting this one. Not sure if you caught this, if it was in the replay or not. I think it was before the game. Could have been quarter time. The boys were somewhere in the Gabba, and it was clearly a windy night in their section. It was in a wind tunnel because all of a sudden they go back and Gary Lyon's chair is just like slowly sinking, and he's panicking. He's trying to fiddle with the chair. When he's fiddling with the chair, his papers are flying away and he's falling off his chair. It was good. It was good. So maybe you can choose which one's better out of this, because I had Gary Lyon
bars high,
falling off his chair, throwing his papers everywhere. Was quite comedic. I was ready to, and I was hoping they just did this for the bit. Every time we then cross over to Gary Lyon, he's just a little bit lower.
End
of the game.
That's such a you bit.
That would have been beautiful. But what I was thinking deserves maybe a bit more than Gary Lyon not being able to set up just a regular office. Is if the Brisbane Lions, and maybe this is a nameless person too, but it's
God. Got
to be the commercial team as a whole here, because these guys may be the laziest group of people that I can't believe that they are phoning in a paycheck. Have you
this
noticed
is like the Marvel toilet incident all over again? But
it could
ahead.
Be. Have you noticed any sponsors around the Brisbane Lions as of late, by chance?
Interesting. I'm going to show I'm not very observant. I'm going to say no.
Well, firstly, I'll run you through it, Lockie. Sure if you've seen their sponsor. We've got Ampol now at the top of our Guernsey at the back. They have Hyundai. They've co-opted.
Oh, yes. I did notice this. Yes.
I don't know what this is about. I don't know. We need to sort this out, surely. Yeah. They're our number one sponsor on ours. Not sure if you can be sharing sponsors and trying to steal that, but okay. Mm-hmm. I noticed that. I believe it was on their jumper last year. So, okay, whatever. That's fine. It's a one-off. Maybe two teams can have the same sponsor. But I was watching the football. I was having a look, and they went to old mate Fagan in the box, coach's box. Now, this year, you might have realized we've got Ampol on the back, as I mentioned. Used to be Trip a deal. Guess who's on the bloody signage behind Fagan?
No.
Guess who's on his sleeves?
No.
Trip a deal, mate. They've gone and got our sloppy seconds again. I don't know what is happening with this commercial team. Someone do not give them a pay rise. Take the money off them. All they're doing is copying our homework. You watch out for next year. Great Southern Bank or whatever it's called is going to be there. They're going to be stealing bloody, I don't know what, Coyote is going to be one of theirs as well. Grunt will be their ball sponsor.
Wow.
I don't know if we've got the same guy working two jobs. Maybe it's not paying enough at Carlton that he's a double agent or something, but come on, mate. You've stolen Hyundai. Now you're getting our sloppy seconds. Brisbane Lions commercial team. Can you just find another sponsor? Surely you can find someone that's not already partnered with someone in the AFL. Step up your game.
That is absolutely giving the when you go to an away game and the
and the ladies there as well.
If she's like, how is there not 18 of these?
if she's there again this year, there could be blood. If we've got those dancers as well, oh no, it's gonna be disaster. But no, so we've got nameless attendee, nameless Brisbane Lions commercial team going into the Hall of Fame. If you found something funny,
that's a goodie,
that you saw around the game, maybe it was an experience like Lockie that you had going into the ground, wherever you were. This can genuinely be as broad as you want to make it, as long as it's somewhat football related on the week. Let us know. Drop it in the comments at Blue Abroad. Head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner, because we want to induct each week one from me, one from Lockie, and one from the listeners. It's a lot of fun, but we've got the serious proceedings out of the way, it is time for another big, big thing, and that is the votes, Lockie. Another prestigious ceremony, and we have a name for this. Those that caught it last year, thanks to the big Cam Oxford, has come up with the greatest name for our award. It is the Navy Blue Corner Blue Bagger Badge of Honor. It's a mouthful, and that's the way we want it to be. Now, we've changed it up this year, Lockie. Everyone's given their 3-2-1 votes every single week. What have you done to change things up? Because you've put a lot of thought into this.
I know. And I really appreciate you allowing me to have just a little bit of creative freedom with the podcast, Ian. I really do appreciate that.
First and only time. We'll see if it sticks.
Hey, if this is a success, maybe I'll get one more in the later half of the year.
We'll see.
I'll stick with this for now. We're doing a lot of fresh things this year. So rather than just going our 3-2-1, the best three players on the ground, I want us each of the 3-2-1 votes to kind of denote a bit of a different meaning for this game. So three votes still will be our bog. Who is the best player on the ground? Just as it always has been. Two votes, it's a little bit more in the John Nichols medal elk, which is, you know, who most exceeded expectation in this game? They don't necessarily have to be the second best player in the game. Maybe they were. But who has, you know, raised the bar? And I feel like so many times with our one vote, there's just a bloke that we just want to give a vote to because we feel like you deserve a vote here, mate. Were you in the top five players? Maybe not. But was it a moment or something about you in this game that feels like you should just get one? That's your one.
Mm. No, I absolutely love it. And you said elk, not ilk. And all I could picture when you mentioned elk. John Nichols elk was Johnny Nichols was riding a bloody beast coming through. What was the word? I'll be honest. I think you were meaning ilk. You said elk, which
John Nichols medal-esque.
You kind of combined them. I got it. I was just conjuring up images of John Nichols just riding into the award ceremony on a big elk, holding on to the whatever they're called. I can't even think of the horns. I don't know. I've lost the plot. But
you should say something embarrassing now too. Please.
Everything I say is embarrassing, Lockie. But
3-2-1.
I love it. I'm keen to hear it. You lead us off because I want to gauge how this goes. And again, let us know your votes in this new format. Three to the best on, two to who you thought went above and beyond their expectations and your expectations of them. And then one to whoever you want to give that vote to. Lockie, who did you give your votes to?
Three votes was super easy for me this week. Big H, just for the big moments. And also, you know, I've seen people talking about the fact that he got to that deliberate out of bounds that Akers kicked at the end. And if he did not get on his bike and get there, they may have been sending it back in for us to catch an L. So big Harry for three. For two, my God, he has been getting his flowers this week, as he absolutely should. Lockie Fogarty. My God. It just like... I feel like I haven't been sold on him until this week. I knew that his role in the team was not as like the typical role of someone that would be best 22, I think, in a premiership team. But what he brought in this game defensively with the tackle pressure, my God.
Yeah.
My God. Deserves two. And one vote, Zachy Williams for me.
Ooh, finally.
I think... showed what we missed in that back line. How clean that man is with the ball, the composure. He's just the piece of the puzzle for me that was missing. And, you know, no disrespect to your man, Youngie, but once Weeders comes back into this back line and that's our six, I think that's the six that's going to take us to the promised land.
No, really love those votes. Love the rationale for them. Zach Williams not in my votes, but it was great to see him, you know, run out a full game of football. It's been so long since he was out there, and you could just see the emotion on his face afterwards, much like Harry being able to kick that goal. For Williams to have that moment, to be back out there, you saw what it meant to him. And I loved that there were moments where, like, no one on the field for us would be able to do it except for him. Looks like he's going to take the easy option, feints the ball, cuts inside, gets an extra few steps, an extra few meters, just drives us forward through dangerous territory. It's an exciting thing to have. And for him to play that well first game back, I can't imagine what he's going to be like a few months into the season. It's going to be electric. I've gone so similar with my votes. Three was to Harry. Could have maybe gone to Charlie because of his his little cameo performance, kicking more goals. But I just thought H's performance all round was incredible. And to kick that goal, you've got to give him the chocolates. Two was similar to you. So close for a Jack Carroll. But I just thought that Fogarty had the full game, was doing it throughout. And I made the note in like the first quarter and in the second quarter. It's like, if one person's giving it everything, it's Lachie Fogarty. His tackle pressure never let up. We needed it from everyone else. When they started to bring it, it was amazing. But yeah, Lachie Fogarty is that player where we didn't know if he was going to be best 22, didn't know where he was going to be and what his role was. I agree with you as well. He's one of those first names now on that team sheet in that forward line, just because of what he does bring. Kicked the goals when he got the opportunity as well, which we've been kind of crying out for. Yeah. I think his role is perfect. I absolutely love it. And my one vote goes to George Hewitt. Thought that he's someone that you mentioned in preseason is he's a little bit under the pump in the sense of what's that midfield mix going to be like? Does someone like a Jack Carroll take that step up where we don't need a Hewitt anymore because a Chera and Walsh are winning enough of the footy? But I think in this game, you just saw the tenacity and what a guy like him can do. Didn't stop every single part of that game. And he's been spoken about a bit by people, but I just really want to give him the love because when you've got so many stars in the team and in the midfield, guys like him definitely go under the radar. And yeah, so he gets my one. But I'm excited to see where the votes land throughout this season. It's a nice, interesting concept. And I think it's an exciting one. But speaking of exciting, we've got another game. We've loved talking about this one. We've talked about it for ages because there was so much to chat about. But we got to move on to the blueprint to victory. Running through the game against Richmond, round one. It's not opening the season, but we come into it with a victory with miles into the legs of these players. I'll kick off this segment, Lockie, by asking, what do you want to see?
I don't know whether this one's too much to ask or not, but I'm going to ask for it. Do you think winning all four quarters is a valid thing to want to see? Is that feasible?
I think it is. I think it is. I think it's good. When we are at the moment looking at Richmond, how they probably saw us to a degree for a few of the years where they were at the top of their game.
Yeah.
We want to be out there proving that not only just we're better, but that we are substantially better and we are a contender. I think four quarters is a great thing to want.
Yep, for sure. I think that's the benchmark, I think, of where we're at. Like, we don't want to be sitting here, like I said earlier, next week talking about a similar scenario to last week where, we got the win, but I don't know, is this going to be a thing now? So it's that winning all four quarters is something I want to see. And the other thing is just if we can bring it from the start. And I know, and I'm not talking about in the mental way, but just the having the game on our terms from the start, the opposite of last week.
Yeah, no, I do love that. I've got one similar, which was shutout win. It doesn't have to be a ridiculously high margin. We don't have to win by 100 points, but I think we're better than Richmond. Let's prove it. Let's not give them a sniff. I want them at arm's length for the whole game. 2 to 3 goals at all stages. Hard work, solid performance. It's that consistency that you're alluding to with your four-quarter win. Yep. It's very similar for me. And the other one was really just around Jack Carroll. I think when we talk about changes he comes straight in from the sub into the starting lineup for Doherty. Yep. And I just want him to continue to flourish. He does not have to be as good as he was against Brisbane. He's very young. He's very inexperienced. I'm not expecting him to be consistent to that level, but I just want to see some glimpses. I want another solid hit out because he's one of those players that will probably make way in a few weeks when Walsh is ready, when we start to get a Hollands comes off the suspension and you can start to make way of a few. Yeah. That's not a bad thing, but I want him to do the best that he can and excite me that we've got this player that we can rely on and make it really hard for those guys to be selected because you're going, well, Jack Carroll can't be dropped from this team. And the composure he showed to kick that goal as well, he looked like he was about to sort of blaze away. He took that extra step for composure. Love to see it. And I'm excited to see some glimpses that I maybe wasn't sure we were going to get from him this year.
Isn't it so interesting how things can change like that? Like we, when we did the depth charts and things not too long ago, just wasn't even in our equation. And here he is.
It's very exciting. So team changes, Lockie. What are your ins? What are your outs? If you're watching this on Blue Abroad, drop it down in the comments. I want to know your team changes. And same if you're listening to this in podcast form, head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner. Send us a DM, tweet at us, wherever you want to interact with us. Let us know your team changes. Very keen to discuss because it's going to be an interesting one. We don't have a lot of players to choose from, which makes this more difficult. What are your ins and outs?
Yes, and just a note that we are from the past at this stage. So there's potential that we'll know, if there's a debutante maybe or something like that. We may hear about that before this is hitting your ears, but I'm keeping it simple and I'm going to reward players when they deserve it. So for me, the only change that I would make is Carroll in for Doc. And I'd be giving Binsey the go as the sub for this one. I considered, so Motlop is a test at this stage from what we've heard. For me, then it would be either Owies or Fantasia to go out. For me, I think let's just keep the continuity, give Motlop another week to rest up. No VFL game that I'm aware of. But, I didn't think that either Fantasia or Owies set the world on fire. Mm. But, Owies was our highest kicking small goal kicker last year. And Orazio, I'm a believer. I'm a believer that he can build. And I think taking him out for Motlop after one game is not a net positive.
Yeah, I actually thought Fantasia had a good game. I liked his link-up play. When he was up around the ball, his composure, some of his inside 50s were great. Some of his run and chase was good as well. Just, probably want him a bit closer to goal, hitting the scoreboard. It's what we want to see him do. Always is definitely at this rate. I don't know, he's a little bit underdone. He probably wouldn't have been selected if other players were fit just because of his conditioning leading up to opening round. But I'm in the boat where I'm assuming Motlop isn't ready to go and we don't really have anyone else to choose from here. I'm basically the exact same as you. I'm going Bins for the sub. I was tossing up between like a Billy Wilson, and I think positionally I like him a little bit more midfield, halfback as well, in case you need to move a Williams if his body isn't 100% and you're just wanting to rest him a little bit later in the game, something like that. I think you can float him around a bit more, but I don't know. I'm not sure he's ready. And I kind of like what we've done with the Jack Carroll in the give him a few years in the VFL, then play him. I don't want to just throw guys in straight away. It was my same thinking for Ashton Moyer.
I was just going to ask.
I didn't love the dynamic necessarily with Kennedy as that kind of mid-size forward, but I guess you can throw Cripps into the forward line and that allows Kennedy to move into the midfield. Moyer suits that position better with Jack Martin not fit, but same thing. I reckon just let this guy play in the VFL for a few months, get ready, then get rewarded. Whereas Bins, he had the whole of last season, best VFL player for us. Has his preseason form warranted it? Not sure. Haven't seen a lot of him, but I back in a whole season of consistent performances. Can play wing, half forward. We've got a versatile team. It replaces a bit of that run from Doc. And I like to inject a bit of pace, a bit of speed as the sub. So yeah, that's what I'm going for. Interested to know everyone's team changes. It's going to be an interesting week. Lockie, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on? Any other final messages before we wrap up this week's episode?
You're going to be there at the G?
Absolutely. Thursday? Cannot wait. Cannot
First one.
Wait.
Cannot wait. Carlton home game. It's going to be popping. I can't wait to be back there at the home.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. A raucous Blues home crowd at the MCG. Mm-hmm. Round one against the
Bring
Tigers. We will be back here next week to talk about a massive win against the Tigers. Oh, I just love that the footy's back. We're going 2-0, baby. Up the bloody baggers. See you guys next time.